Hello, welcome to Brap Life. My name's Angel. This week's episode is brought to you by our new sponsor, Champion Brick Racing. So this episode is really cool. I got to sit down with Cody Webb and talk a little bit about Yamaha, of course, but also talk about CW2 training and, of course, Cody's story in general. Not everybody knows his story. I only knew part of it. So it was really cool to be able to talk to him, talk about being nerdy, and just share some stories. It's really, really cool to be able to sit down with somebody like this. We always talk about it here on this podcast that the pros in our discipline in hard enduro are just so accessible and just so humble. And so it was really, really cool to talk to Cody, just like I talk to any other person. He's a super nice guy and he's just as nerdy as I am. So it's really fun. We kind of both end up going on tangents. But it was great to connect and to know that he supports the community in so many ways. He's not just a really good rider, but he truly believes in helping the community. And I think that that's fantastic. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Don't forget to check out the link in the description for our sponsor info. And I'll see you guys next week. So thank you again for stopping by. It's really, really cool to have you here. So of course, I think everybody who's listening to this is going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe he's on here. This is amazing. how are you liking the bike now that I just saw your like latest video earlier today. You've done so much to it. how's it feeling? Is it just like better and better every time you do something?
Yeah, honestly, at first I kind of got scared because I like rode this bike in its stock form. I'm like, okay, this is really fun. Definitely a lot of potential here, like a great base platform. In terms of like generic single track riding, like nothing crazy extreme or a little bit faster hair scramble type stuff, I think the bike's phenomenal for that. It's just when you get in some of the extreme situations, like if you're on the side of a hill and try to get going, like you have to fight it a little bit more, a little more revs to keep it up in the meat of the power. So yeah, I did a bunch of work right off the bat, talking to a bunch of people, watching YouTube videos and kind of taking this from here and something from over there and piecing it all together in like my own, like, I don't know, build that I was pretty proud of. And the first time I went out, I was like, oh boy, this is not good. I've gone backwards. So I like scared myself. And part of that was honestly my own fault. I put in V-Force reads and the stock reed block is just different. And so I was missing a gasket. So I had an air leak because I copied what stock was. So that was dumb on my part. So I got that all buttoned up. But, you know, every time now it's at least kind of been a step in the right direction. And there's still a couple more things I can do. So I think, honestly, my biggest issue at King of Motos wasn't necessarily like motor performance. It came down to like my suspension setting was off. And you never really know until you race it. So now I have a direction. I'm gonna move forward on that. And I was stalling a bunch on downhills, but turns out I bent the crap out of my rear rotor guard and it was just grinding against my rear rotor. So that probably didn't help with my stalling.
I saw you in Dead Blow Canyon and you looked like right at me. At least it seemed like you looked right at me when you were kickstarting your bike. And I was just like, I was taking pictures and I was like, I just won't take a picture of that. It's fine.
was it kind of near the bottom?
By the bottom of the hill of like the third
near
lap.
Near the bottom.
When you guys were coming down that super gnarly rocky.
Oh, yeah. Bree right in there in that spot. Yeah. I didn't even know that was you. Yep. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That was honestly my favorite part maybe of the whole course, was like trying to navigate those huge boulders to get down into.
Crazy. The line you took was different than everybody else.
I know for sure no one took that because I was like just trying to beeline it straight down to catch up because I knew I was losing ground in the faster stuff. And I'm like, huge rock, drop. And there was no marks at all where I was going. In the second lap, there was no marks again. I'm like, I'm for sure the only dummy going this way right now.
It was crazy. You definitely, every time I saw you that weekend, you were the only person doing the lines that you were doing.
Yeah.
Like every single lap, I was just like, huh, all right, cool. Like you do your own thing.
I lost, but you know, at least I went down in style, I guess.
It was memorable. So that's all that matters.
No, I was still proud. Like I was still proud of the result. Like I knew I could have won. Obviously things just didn't go my way. Right off the bat, and then I just couldn't push through the faster stuff. I just couldn't stay on track, and then my hands started getting roached, so like my blisters are pretty much healed now, but I got a couple blisters. And like, you know, if you're not leading, you're not really putting the extra effort in, and I was like, I'm just gonna have to do the best I can now because I can't catch those guys. Whenever I get in the hard stuff, I enjoyed it more than trying to stay on track and all the medium enduro stuff.
Yeah. It was a crazy race. I had never been to that one before. So I had only been to the East Coast ones. So on the first day, I was up at the top, like right before that giant granite slab going downhill.
Oh, yeah.
And I was up there and I had to hike up there. And I was like, oh my God, this is so freaking gnarly. Like
the first lap, I went like straight down on the left side. If you're going down, I was like straight down on the left.
Yeah.
And I took the same line on the second lap. And I think I was the second guy there. So it was like pretty clean. And second lap, obviously more people took the line, and the rock huge slab was like covered in dust. And I had zero control. Like I was going so fast and I was just like uncontrollably sliding, and I hit like a rock catch berm at the bottom and was just like, oh my God, that was ridiculous.
So, okay. I'm glad that you feel that way. Cause when I was coming down afterwards and I saw what you're talking about, and I was like walking.
Yeah, the left line was like treacherous.
Yeah. And that's what I had come up. So that's what I was trying to go down. And to be fair, I was hiking in moto boots cause I rode my bike out there. But I was like, I slid down that slab and I was like, oh my God, this is sketchy. But my friend had been trying to talk me into doing that race. And I was like, no, I'm not really comfortable riding West Coast. And once I got out there, I was like, oh, I'm so freaking glad I didn't do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been like, definitely a lot of people were smart and they went way right on that downhill slab.
Yeah. I think that was the move for sure. At least for, you know, us. But that's cool. It's always awesome to see you ride. It's been really cool to watch you throughout the last year that I've been kind of part of this world. So I am super interested in having you talk about CW2 training, because everybody knows that I'm pretty new to this. I'm starting to get to a point where I'm going to be doing my first hard enduro race in April at Battle of the Goats. So I'm really excited for that. And so I've been using CW2 training to help with getting ready for it. So I thought it'd be really cool if you could just highlight. I know it's been almost a year, right, since you launched it?
Yeah. I think I did it right before Grinding Stone, maybe. So yeah, getting close to a year now. But yeah, it's like, cause you know, obviously I chatted with you for the first time and met you like when we had the call, and like, I don't really announce it on my thing, but like anyone who signs up can do like a 15-minute call with me. And it's not, everyone's like, oh, I'm sorry, it's been 15 minutes. I'm like, it's fine. That's just like, there's a reference. Like if I enjoy talking to you and hearing your story, I'll keep going. So yeah, I thought I had a good chat with you, and it was just really interesting to hear your story because it was a lot different than the average person normally that's on there. So yeah, I was like, okay, well, it's the least I can do is come on her show now and help out.
No,
and keep
I
you in
really
the sport,
appreciate
you know?
That.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
You know, I'm here for here for everyone, I guess. So, but yeah, no, CW training's been a fun side project, to be honest. Like, it was like the main focus there for a while, but now I'm like, I need more hours in the day, and then I'm like burnt out by the end of the day. So I'm struggling with my time management right now, but I have too many things to do, and apparently I should have asked Yamaha and everyone else for more money so I can pay Gator more to help me or have someone more, a bit more full time. Cause I'm still doing a lot on my own with the bikes and the video editing, but yeah, no, CB training's been just, it's been pretty fun, honestly, on the side and seeing everyone's involvement and, like, you know, chatting with people like you, or I've had two people from China I've talked to.
Yeah.
Let's see, a couple people from Australia, Turkey. Like, I've talked to people all over the place. So it's really kind of cool to, like, I'm interested in that stuff, right? Because I've traveled quite a bit through the years racing, and I always, you know, try and at least have some wild dish wherever I go. So I like hearing other people's stories and trying to encourage them. And at the end of the day, like, you know, you're not going to become an amazing rider in, you know, taking one in-person class or doing, you know, one training thing. It's just like the repetitiveness that makes it second nature, and you get, I guess, you, let's say, like, more comfortable on the bike. So my whole thing is just to, like, inspire confidence in people and hopefully, like, open up their eyes a little bit and get more comfortable on the bike. And at the end of the day, like, you know, the less energy you're using, you know, the longer you can keep riding and enjoying yourself. So, you know, you know, it's more, there's obviously stuff for, like, absolute beginner, but I don't focus too much on, like, pure beginner. You know, it's people who've already kind of been riding a little bit, and, you know, teach them a little bit more technical fundamentals, and just, you know, that way they can go out and enjoy themselves more and show up their buddies.
I think that that's awesome. So on this podcast, normally we're talking about people's stories, which I would like to touch base with your story here in a second. But one of the big things that I always ask people is what kind of training they have, because it's always interesting to see a lot of people are self-taught. And, like, I was really lucky that I went to a clinic, like, in my first year of, like, actually really getting seat time on the bike. And then I found your program this last year, and that's been huge for me, because with all my traveling, I can't always be near an in-person clinic. And as much as, like, I'm a total nerd and I love to, like, learn that stuff, it's really hard to get to those, and it's kind of expensive. So it's been really cool to be able to just have this platform to go in to ask questions if I need to, and to really just be able to, like, go on my phone, look at the drills that I want to do that day, and then just be able to go out and just do them and like, get a refresher on what it is that I'm supposed to be doing and how I'm supposed to be doing it right.
Yeah, and correct, like, correct the negatives.
Correctly. Yeah. So I have, like, the place that I'm living right now, I have, like, 6 acres of land, and I've got, like, a full little, like, playground set up with, like, logs and cement barriers and stuff like that. So, like, I'm really working on my clutch skills and everything. Because even though I've started to do harder and harder stuff out on the trails, I still practice all of those fundamental things, like, 3 or 4 times a week. Like, I just think that that's really been the reason that I've been able to progress as quickly as I have, which I'm not saying I'm good. I'm not. but for how little I've been riding, like, I bought my bike new last year in January, and it's got, as of today, it has 80 hours on it. And that's all I've put on this bike. And I've been able to go from barely being able to turn around in a parking lot without, like, and still falling all the time to, I just went up this crazy mountain yesterday, and there's no trail on it. It's super rocky. And I went up it, and I don't know what got into me to make me want to do that. But I was like, I told my friend, I was like, let's just go on a nice, easy ride today. Like, let's just keep it super chill. We had a crazy weekend. I trained 2 days this weekend, and I was just, you know, kind of feeling it. And then we got to the bottom of the mountain, and I was like, there's kind of a line there. And he's like, no, there's not. And I was like, yeah, there is. And then I just went. So it was super fun. But 4 months ago, even 3 months ago, I wouldn't have had the confidence to do about that. Yeah. So, but those fundamentals are huge. And that's what's been giving me so much confidence to be able to do stuff like that. So, and, you know, I mean, the cool factor's there, because then people are like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. I can't believe I did it. I literally got to the top and I laughed for, like, a minute straight.
The crazy thing is like, I'll go, I cross train like riding moto a decent amount. I didn't so much, but now I have like a 450 and a bike built for it. So it like makes my life a lot easier. And I'll like just mess around the parking lot before, after, right over a K rail in people's mind. They're like, oh my God, how did you? I'm like, that's this is what I do for fun. Like,
I don't know. It's crazy. It blows them away. Yeah, the guy that I've been riding with, he's a trials guy. And so we had one of the B-class hard enduro guys came out this weekend, and he was riding with us, and he's a step or two or five ahead of me. And yeah. So he's like zapping up all these rocks and stuff. And my friend was just like, what is he doing?
Like, and he's a trials guy and he was still confused.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, doing it on a big bike. Like,
yeah, he says
that he can't translate his skills to the big bike. He's working
they
on
it. They translate it. He's just nervous.
Doesn't want to scratch his bike. I think it's more of he doesn't want to scratch himself.
Like, oh, or that too.
You know, you don't want to break things when you get to a certain age. Like, those of us who are older think about those things.
Brennan is 17. I went over the handlebars last week during, like, the hard enduro burrow thing we did. And I was just, like, mad at myself. I was like, what are you doing? Like, and it was, like, it was just a mental error. I couldn't believe I did it. I just sat there perplexed. Broke my coolant line. Lost all my coolant. And I was just like, what are you doing? You can't be doing this. You're too old for this.
Well, and see, that's funny because you're 34, 35.
36.
Okay. So I just turned 35 yesterday. And I'm just getting, thank you. Yeah. I'm just getting into all of this. Like in the last year, like who gets into this late in life and just like pushes this hard? Like,
and you didn't really ride before either. So like that's the big.
Yeah.
Difference. Like a lot of people, like a lot of my friends I ride with, they grew up doing moto or supercross stuff. And you know, my buddy broke his back and like he had like some paralysis issues for a bit and like just completely quit that. And now he just like rides harder with us. He doesn't have any issues, obviously, luckily. But yeah, like he doesn't really have any care and he just loves the adventure aspects. I think that's what gets most people hooked, you know. But like he started from something else and then got into it. You were like, I'm going to choose this and dive right into it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a little bit crazy, but I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, I call my bike happy every single time I'm on that bike. Like I've been posting so many fails lately and every time I'm falling, I'm just laughing. Like it's just fun. I don't know. You have to be a little bit crazy to ride dirt bikes is what we're always talking about on this podcast. And then to do hard enduro, you have to be a little crazier. So,
or dumb. I don't know. I guess maybe that too.
It could be that. I'd like to think I'm not a dumb person. You know,
we're
like,
analytical.
But like, exactly. Yeah. But I think that's part of what it is, right? Like, at least for me, I've always been, like I said, I'm a nerd. I like to learn new things. I like to learn how to do things and how to, like, I like to be challenged. So for me, that's what harder terrain does. Like, I can go and I can ride two track and have it be smooth and it's easy.
It challenges
and it's a
you
good
with
day.
Less risk, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I just, With the skills that I've started to build, now I do feel like I have less risk because I know how to do things and like I know the proper way to do them. And so I still fail.
Yeah.
Don't we all? But
the bad thing is when you start learning how to crash off obstacles, that's when you're like, okay, I'm getting too good at this now.
Haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. I think it was years of trials helped me learn how to crash without destroying my bike.
Yeah,
I'm also 6 foot three with long legs, so I can reach the ground in places most people can't do.
That's actually something.
Or for the Australians, I'm like 1.91, 1.9 something.
It's always fun to do conversions. That's the whole being able to touch the ground thing has been something that in the last like 2 months, I've really realized that I can no longer watch people do a feature and then do it like after them. I have to do it first Because if I watch people and all of you tall people paddle up stuff, I can't do that. So if I try and do that, that results in me falling. So I have had to really work on my balance and really keep my feet on the pegs. And that's how I get over things. And a lot of people have been telling me lately, they're like, I can't believe you kept your feet up for that. I'm like, I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I don't fall. Yeah. So, but again, it goes back to all the fundamental training. Like, I've done a lot of static balance work and a lot of like lock bar turns and stuff like that. So, like, I've really put the time into it so that way I can try and have that translate out on the trail.
Yeah.
Try.
Yeah, try. I mean, one thing I do whenever I do like in-person clinics, you know, you kind of start really simple. And I think people are really bored in the beginning. You're just doing like simple clutch things, clutch control. And then I always go to like, okay, like, I'm like, this is not about how fast you can do this. Like, I do not care how fast you can do this turn. Just see if you can give me a full lock turn, like slipping the clutch, taking your time. And like, it is such a struggle for a large percentage of riders. Mm-hmm. And like, even riders that you're surprised they can do stuff pretty good, you slow it down for them and like, they just can't figure it out. Like, they keep breaking the full lock and having to like open up and gain speed to recover. So like, the fact that you're working on all this stuff, obviously it's doing something right, because now you're getting these situations where you can't reach and your balance and, you know, your clutch skills starts showing off.
Yeah. It's been crazy, because I'm very fortunate that I've been able to ride with a lot of really good riders. And I'm always very, very honest about my skill level. I'm like, you know, if there's like an F class, that would be me.
You gotta give yourself some credit.
Well, now it's better.
F is failing. D in the beginning is at least you put some sort of effort in, I think.
Oh, you did not see me when I first got this bike. Oh my God.
I did not. You're right.
Like, it was so freaking tall. Before I got the seat shaved, before I got my suspension done.
Didn't you have a Husky or something?
Yep. TE300.
Yeah. Yeah. You went straight for, And those sit higher in the rear than like a Sherco or something too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. My friend was here this weekend and he went and sat on my bike and he's like, dude, this is tall for me.
Yeah.
And he actually rides a Sherco. So that was really funny. He's like, you should be riding one of these, cause this is way shorter. And I was like, yeah, but I like my bike.
You got it set up now. Yeah. We did it was like myself and two other guys, a trials rider named Trayson, and then Jared Lamb, who does a lot of the Harndero stuff in the A class. We were in Utah, and this foundation, I was chatting with them. They ended up putting it all together, which was really cool, but it was like for teenagers. So it was a riding clinic for teenagers that like kind of like just give them a community and like a mental health and wellness type thing connected to it as well. So like, it was definitely something I was like really stoked to be a part of, just because I felt like it was like for a good cause. But there was someone that showed up with a Sherco, and I'm like, oh no, that person lost their seat on the way here. Where's their seat? And like, I didn't realize they had like a fully cut out seat on the Sherco. Oh, like, it was like no foam. It was just like a seat cover on the plastic body, I feel like. But yeah, I literally thought like they lost their seat from a distance when they drove in. Because the Sherco just has the twist tab rear seat on it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, funny.
So it's a common thing.
That's really cool that you did that, though. Like, that's another thing that we've talked about a lot. So we always talk on this podcast about the community of Hardenduro and how different it is. The fact that you're on this podcast, with this being such a small podcast, the fact that you remember my story and everything, like, that's a testament to the things that we always talk about. We talk about how approachable the pros are in this discipline. And, you know, that goes to you, that goes to like Graham Jarvis, everybody that I've met in this discipline is just so, like, I guess giving is the right word. Like, you guys are always willing to help. Like, you guys are always willing to talk to people. Like, I've heard you talk to people about like bike setup and stuff like that. Like, I think that's the coolest thing. You don't get that in every discipline. No. Like,
I mean, to be fair, like, it's like, so, you know, obviously you can compare, like I'd be like comparable to like a Chase Sexton, right? In the supercross world. Like, but then you look at it, like our numbers in Hardendo are so small, like we can actually like chat and remember these things. And like, yeah, there's obviously times where I go somewhere and people are like, oh yeah, we like, if I just like barely talk to them in passing or they showed up at a race and like, you know, I don't remember everyone. You know, but there's definitely a lot of people I do remember talking to, especially if it's like more than just a minute where they say, hey, you know, blah, blah. My cousin rode with you. And I'm like, oh, cool. I don't remember him, but I don't, I think people just say that, I don't know, but like, we're just like a smaller community. So like, we do have that ability to like connect a little bit more and have those relationships where you like remember chatting with these people. And it's not like overbearing, whereas like a supercross, like they have like a set time to do autographs because there's 40,000 people there trying, you know, not all 40,000 people are in the pits, but like, you know, 35 to 40,000 people show up to a supercross race. And at a Hardendro, we're like, woohoo, we have more than just friends and family here this weekend. There's a couple locals show up. So yeah, that's probably why. And then I came from trials, which like doesn't get any respect that it deserves. So I haven't changed much.
I think it's really cool though. We've had a couple times where you've actually been brought up about bringing your family to races. And that's a huge thing, is just how family oriented it all is. People are bringing their kids to race hard enduro. You know, your kids are there watching, and it's just very family oriented. And I don't know about for you, but for me personally, when I started going to these events, it feels like a family gathering every single time. There's so many people that I know now, and it's just really cool to see everybody and catch up. It's a really inclusive community. Like I said, I was so new to all of this when I first started with Hardenduro last year. At Battle of the Goats, I was just like, oh, no one's gonna like know who I am. When I showed up in Pennsylvania, I was like, no one's gonna remember me. It's all good. I'm just gonna be on my own.
And people remember chatting with you and talking to you.
Yeah. And it was really crazy. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And people were like, yeah, come have dinner with us. And it was super awesome. So it's super, super inclusive. And I just absolutely love the community. It's one of the best things that I've found since starting to ride bikes, other than, of course, actually riding.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, I mean, I wish I could, like, have my family come to more of them, but, you know, they'll be in Hawaii. My wife wanted to come to Grinding Stone, but I need to get a bigger vehicle. I didn't anticipate having my own race team, and I have too much crap I need to bring now. So I think it'll just be Gator and I there. But they'll probably come out to Moab. So
that'd be cool.
Yeah, and then it's tough too. My kids in school. Not that they care, because I'm paying way too much money for Montessori, so they could care less if he's there or not. But you know, next year he'll start kindergarten, so he'll be in public school, and that's when I probably got to fight the county to be like, no, look at, like, I'll trade you guys, I'll come in, do talks at the school, do some wheelies on my dirt bike, like, let me get my kid out of school for a bit. And even when I was, like, I guess I was fortunate enough that, like, my parents did send me to a private school, even though I hated it growing up, but, you know, I rode all when I was younger at trials, and I'd go to all the nationals, and I went to a small, like, Catholic high school, and I still remember, like, at the end of the year, the teachers did, like, a roast of the students, kind of like, I don't know, it's like, I don't know, somehow I didn't forget this. I don't remember any of the other roasts against me, but my AP biology teacher brought in, like, a massive envelope, like a huge envelope. And it was like, oh, here's this is all of Cody's email list for all the excuses for why he can't be at school. Because I obviously missed a decent amount of school, but I still got my work done. So, I was a pretty good student. I'm a nerd too. So,
I was gonna say earlier. So, like, the whole Yamaha thing and all of this stuff that you've had to do to basically, like, change the bike to what's gonna work best. It seems to be right up your alley. Like, you have mechanical engineering degree.
Yeah, mechanical
correct?
engineering.
Yeah. So, like, you're good at this stuff. Like, you're the person to be doing it, I feel
I
like.
think there's probably better people, maybe kind of like all around I'm decent because like I have like the writing experience and
Yeah.
testing this stuff before, and I was good enough to get through school. There's definitely better engineers than me, I'll tell you that much. I think I maybe have more
Well,
like redneck engineering. The amount of people like they were making fun of me, but not being mean, but they're like giving me a hard time about like how I was like drilling and tapping my swing arm to mount my like bulletproof tabs. They're like, oh, I'm a machinist, like why would like I would never do it like this. I'm like, this is what I got in my garage, dude. Like, get off my case. I don't have a machine shop.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, I'm just really trying to, create my resume to give to Yamaha and be like, yo, hire me when I'm done. Please, please hire me. So I don't like, obviously I'll have like a desk job, but I think it'd be a pretty cool desk job. So
Yeah, that'd be
I just
awesome.
keep trying to let them know, hey, I'm here if you need me. I can do these things.
I can do this and I can do
Yeah.
this. Like, no, I think it's really cool. It takes a lot of ingenuity to do what you're doing, and it's really awesome to see it. I've been watching the videos, and a lot of it's over my head because I'm still learning a lot about dirt
Yeah.
bikes and like how to work on them and everything. But it's still cool to see because you can, it feels like you're excited. Like, it feels like you're really excited. And when you
Yeah,
engage
I
your
think I was
gallery, it's
like,
just like, oh my
yeah,
God.
I was just like super proud. Like, even though, like, when I got to King of Motos this year and like that whole week, I went to Dirt Bike Magazine. I went here, we had the RC shoot. And then Friday was kind of like the big reveal day for my team. And there was just a lot of buzz and excitement about Yamaha being there with me. I guess, me being there with the Yamaha, I guess. But yeah, like I felt like I'd already won at that point. Like I was on cloud nine, and people were really interested in the bike and stoked on how they looked. And for me, that was
Yeah.
like my confidence was maybe higher than it should have been because I got smoked in the race, but it was still good.
That's me on my bike all the time. When I'm on
Yeah.
my bike, my confidence is like way up here.
Yeah.
And then I get off the bike and I start thinking about the things that I was doing, and I'm like, what got into me? Like, what was that? So I totally get that part.
Yeah.
Okay, well, flipping gears, usually this is how I start the podcast, but we had other things to talk about. So I don't fully know your story. So do you want to give a little bit of background on like how you got into riding in the first place? I know you just touched a little bit about your high school
Yeah.
experience, but
It started before high
what
school.
was the
So yeah, my dad competed nationally in trials. So, and then he went to the Trial to Nations 4 times for Team USA in like the 80s, I think. I don't think he went in the 90s, but sometime in the 80s. So I think the best he ever finished was like second in a national. So my dad always rode. He didn't start riding until he was 12, and he had like kind of the same vision for me, like, oh, and he's 12, then he can start riding. But I grew up going to events every weekend locally, this and that. Not every weekend, but obviously a lot. And I started riding when I was like 3 or 4, somewhere around there. And then I think I started riding like without training wheels on bicycle when I was 2, because I don't know, my parents always brought it up, but if we were in Nebraska at a national and there was potholes everywhere and my training wheels kept getting stuck on the outside of the pothole, and I would just like spin in place, not go anywhere pedaling. So my dad just like took my training wheels off when I was 2 and just sent me on my way. So I think I just was like, I grew up in it, like even more than like my son is, because I don't really compete locally anymore. So it's just a lot to go that far with my family all the time. So yeah, I grew up riding. But I only rode trials, and I had like a Honda 50, I had a PW50, then a Honda 50, and I'd ride like the 4 line and the youth stuff on Saturday at local trials events. And then when I was 10, I started doing like the nationals with my dad. My dad was doing expert, and they wouldn't allow minders back then, like only the pro class could have minders in trials. So my dad would start way earlier than me, and he would like race the first lap to try and catch up to me, and then we would ride together the rest of the day. And then every weekend, that's what we did. Like Saturday, Sunday, we'd go riding. And obviously it got to the point where my dad didn't even ride anymore. He would just cut sections with the chainsaw and make me do things. And I just had like a really steep learning curve because of like all the focus was on me, essentially.
Yeah.
And then, I started in the high school class when I was 10. And then I won the high school national championship. I don't remember, 2002, I think. So quite some time ago. And I think the first nationals I rode were in 1999. So quite a long time ago. and it came full circle because I rode in Wyoming in 1999. First national I think I ever did. And then the first time I ever rode pro in the nationals was 2003. And just last year, I went and did a clinic on the same property. So like 99, 2003, 2024. 2002, won the high school national trials championship. 2003, won the expert and moved up to pro for the last three races. And I grew up with like very old school rider mentality because my dad was the old school. I was not like the Tony Bow, Adam Raga, like rear tire hopping everywhere. I was more like Doug Lampkin, if people knew who he was. I was like a Graham Jarvis. I was like a Graham Jarvis trials rider. I didn't look flamboyant, but I got shit done. And I could barely even hop when I went to the pro class. Like I just had really strong fundamentals. I rode pro in trials for quite some time. 2000, I don't know. I got second a bunch of years in a row. So I got second to Jeff Aaron, who's like a 10-time champ. And then Pat Smaggi came in. I got second every freaking time behind him. And then I switched to Gas Gas in 2010. And I won my first and only pro trials championship. I won two indoor ones, but they were lame and no one cares about those. So, and then in 2007, I did my first endurocross on a trials bike. Because everyone else was doing endurocross on trials bikes, and I beat them at nationals. I was like, I can do this. Taddy Blazusiak was like my hero. And then 2008, I bought my first dirt bike. I got like a KTM 250 SX, and I put a flywheel weight on it and an 18-inch wheel, and that was pretty much about it. And I got it 2 weeks before the final round of endurocross in Vegas that year. And I was like one position away from making the main event. And I was pretty much hooked. And then the next year I made, I think it was three round series back then, but I went to Denver and Vegas and I made both main events. And then I think in, it was when I went to Gas in 2010, I rode for Gas Gas when I won the trials championship, and they gave me like a magazine bike. Like they gave me a roached out enduro bike to ride. Like it wasn't. And then I ended up like picking up a backup bike. So I had like no parts or anything. And I picked up another one that like wasn't even the same bike. It was like a 2008, but it was like the same model, essentially. Like most stuff crossed over. And that was like a part in our Chevy Express van, and that was like my parts bike when I'd go to endurocross. But I ended up getting a podium at the final round that year in Vegas, which was pretty sick. Nice. And 2011 to 2014, I rode for Beta. The moment Beta came out with a two-stroke, all of a sudden I started winning everything because I was riding a big bike before that. It was pretty cool because I was at Beta before they had the Beta 350 and before they had the two stroke. And for endurocross, I think in 2011, they might have finally came out with a 350. I don't remember. I went to Europe too for them and rode some super enduro stuff as a complete knob. But my VIN numbers on my bike, my race bike in America, was 0001. Which is pretty cool. So I had like the first 350 off the line.
That's awesome.
So that was cool. But yeah, in 2013, I won my first ever Enduro Cross. 2014, I won the championship. And yeah, I just kind of took off from there. Did a year on a satellite KTM team. And I was really mad about that because I was beating their factory guy that they had, Taylor Robert. but poor Taylor, he shouldn't have been. I mean, obviously, he's really freaking good. He's way more well-rounded than I am. But yeah, they got him to do hard enduro stuff, and they just should have hired me. They should have hired Taylor to do works and all the other stuff, and then hired me for hard enduro. And yeah, then 2016, I just got the Red Bull deal and factory KTM, and kind of just kept going from there. 2019, blew my knee out. That was terrible. Mm-hmm. Went to Sherco, and I've obviously still had really good results, but it's like I never felt quite as like gnarly after hurting myself seriously, you know. So I have moments of brilliance, but and now I'm just using my name because I love riding and I don't want to leave yet, so I'm just hanging around.
I think it's really cool.
I'm still riding and training, though. I'm not slacking off. We're still putting effort out there.
That's what I was gonna say. I was like, you put in a lot of effort. Like you're still here. You're still relevant. You're still, you know, you're doing a lot, and you do a lot for the sport. You do, you know, you're racing. You're like, we already talked about the community aspect, the CWT training. You're doing crazy things with Yamaha. Like I think this is really cool, and I'm super excited to see like kind of how everything goes as you're getting the bike more dialed in and everything. Like, it's really fun to watch this journey for you.
I still have like, I mean, I have like two videos on deck that I've already edited, and I'm just like trying to space them out now, but I have like my whole bike finish build video with Gator. I haven't even touched yet. And I have like a whole King of Motos vlog, and I'm like, oh God, but I'm flying it tomorrow. It's too short of a flight to get enough done, but I'll hopefully get some more editing done to get some more stuff on YouTube.
And it seems like people are eating it up. I mean,
I can't believe it. I mean, I knew it was going to happen because before I signed with Yamaha, obviously I had to do my own research, and I found videos of these dudes I've never even heard of with like 150,000 views on a YZ build. I'm like, who is this guy? And like, their stuff's still growing. And I'm like, dude, you've done one race your entire life. Like, I don't even need to race and I could be famous, apparently. So I'm still racing. Don't worry about it. But I'm trying to do more, I guess, on the, and I don't know what to call it, ambassador side or influencer content creator. There we go.
Content creator. There you go.
But it's fun to do. Like, I've gotten better at it. I used to like hate, like, I just felt so cringe trying to like promote myself and like video myself do things. But I don't feel as bad about it anymore. I don't know. I hated it for a bit.
I think people really want to see what you're doing. I think it's really, really cool. When you get a sneak peek behind like what pro riders are doing, it's, you know, anything that people can glimpse from you guys is just like, they eat it up because everyone wants to know, like, what does your training look like? What is, you know, what are you eating on a daily basis? Like, that's a big thing, especially for people who are looking to like push to that level. And that's something that we usually cover when we talk to people who race on this as well, is like, what does a training regimen look like on and off the bike? What does nutrition look like? We had Riley Bender on here, and he was talking about how he won like 5 races in a row eating McDonald's.
Yeah. Okay, I got a good McDonald's story. Okay. My nickname for a while that my dad coined for me when I was younger was Keebler. You know, the Keebler elves, like the little fat elves. Yeah, in the trees. Yeah, I definitely, I was a little chunky when I was younger. And then all of a sudden freshman year hit and I grew, I got taller and I kind of just stretched out, and that helped. And then I, you know, I rode and I played basketball throughout high school. And then high school ended and basketball ended. And I was only riding trials really at the time. And then I kind of just kept gaining weight. And then one day I just like looked down. I'm like, what? I'm fat. What happened to me? What is this? And I don't remember how old I was. 21, maybe. It was after, because I graduated high school kind of late, the way I was in school. I remember going on a summer trip, because we'd go, and they used to have like a teen, I think they probably still have, but a teen trials camp at the Trials Training Center, where Tennessee Knockout is. And, you know, we'd be there all week. And I was the oldest one at that point, obviously, because I was even one of the older ones when we first went there. I think I went in the first year they ever had it when I was like 16. Because I remember driving the Scorpa van and trailer all over the place, hauling a bunch of kids. I shouldn't even been driving. I mean, it was good. I learned how to drive a trailer and back a trailer up at 16. But yeah, like I was the only one that really had like my own salary. And, you know, everyone else was like their parents, you know, they were younger than me. So like they didn't really have real jobs or anything yet to afford this. So I would just go to Burger King or McDonald's every day on like for lunch on these road trips and just get order like two things off the dollar menu. I get like a junior cheeseburger and like a small fry. And but I remember, I forget how much weight I lost. Yeah, eat McDonald's. I lost a bunch of weight that summer. And then I got home. I'm like, this is easy. And then I started running and I got like too skinny. So I think the heaviest I remember weighing was like 224 pounds. I don't know what that is in stone for the British or kilos. and then I got down to 178. So that's pretty big. And now I'm probably around 190. So I've gained like, but you know, dad bod. It's called an enduro pouch, right? You need an enduro pouch. I was just hanging out with Skylar Howes, the rally racer, you know? And Skylar, he called it like a rally bod. You need a rally bod. So I just have like a little enduro pouch now. It's necessary.
It's storing your extra calories for the race. That's all it is.
Exactly.
You gotta have something.
Look at Stu Baylor. Stu Baylor, come on. So
I love that idea. That's funny.
But yeah, McDonald's, like you can lose weight at McDonald's. I'm proof right there. You can lose weight eating McDonald's.
That's your new sponsorship is McDonald's now. You can go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I'd take that corporate money.
It might be pretty easy, you know?
I mean, yeah. Then I can afford to pay an editor to do all this for me. Get more content out for
people. That's great. There you go. It's a lot of work to do that. I mean, yeah. I don't do anything nearly as crazy as you do.
My wife, like, Morgan, she makes a lot of the stuff for me, like on Canva for like, I probably do most of my YouTube thumbnail stuff, but a bunch of other stuff. She makes all the imaging and flyer type stuff. And that takes a load off my shoulders. That's for sure.
That's good.
Then she takes care of all my business. I hate sitting at the... I like get so frustrated the moment I can't figure something out on a laptop. Like I start losing my mind. So I just stick at what I know. And like all my YouTube videos I do for the bike builds and riding, like I do the most minimal amount of editing and effort. Like people used to get mad if I had cuss words. So I go through there and I take those out now. That's about all I do.
Well, and
the first video I made with Gator, there was a lot of bad mouthing. So I just left about 20 minutes out. Like, we can't have any of that in there. It's not good.
20 minutes?
I don't know if it was 20 minutes, but it was us just like the camera was on a tripod and it was us taking the bikes apart and just talking shit. So that didn't stay.
Well, I mean, that's real, but I totally get it. When you're at your kind of level, you've got to, you know, kind of please.
Yeah, I get scolded by Morgan all the time. I have a brand to uphold now for myself, so I gotta be
corporate. You gotta be good. Well, to a certain extent you still gotta be you.
Yeah, sometimes I get annoyed at people, like I think she gets more mad at than I do about you know, obviously there's, everyone has an opinion, and Instagram's a place for mean comments. And sometimes I'll roast people back. Other times I'll write something out and I'll feel better and then I delete it. But today, the best thing, I think it wasn't even my post. Maybe I'm part of it. I don't know. But US Hardenduro posted something about my bike. And it was just a bunch of like swipe through photos and like, oh, what's your favorite part? And someone put like, KTM is always better and something else. He said, better and something along the lines of the better. And I just had to chime in and I just put, and broker. That's all I put. And then he's like, all right, I tried to roast you and you went up, man. I'm like, thank you. It was friendly. It was a friendly roast.
Yeah, that's good. No, it's great. Like, you don't have a reputation for being like a jerk or anything like that. It's, but you have a reputation for being like real. And a lot of people call you like the people's champ. Like, you're the guy that people feel like they can go and talk to. And I think that's really cool. So you definitely, you're on brand for that.
Yeah. I try and stick to it. I mean, it's a small world and news travels quickly. So you gotta.
Yeah.
And I don't want, like, maybe because I grew up Catholic, even though I don't go to church anymore. Oh, I kind of went for a little bit, but mostly for my kids, influenced them. But
yeah,
I don't want to get religious or anything, but I hated going when I was in school, but I had to go.
Yeah.
But it, I think it just gives you good morals at the end of the day. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. Totally. I like that.
I'm still here, so maybe it paid off.
Definitely, definitely. So
I like today. Of, I don't. Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I don't know if you saw it today, but IRC posted and collab with me on something about.
Yeah.
And I just like laughed so hard at the story they tagged me in about it. It was like he was written off by the industry, like. They were like saying how like no one wanted to hire me or something. And I'm like, that's the most clear. I should have texted them. I'm like, that's too clickbaity for me.
Well, you didn't put it out. So
yeah, I didn't put it out. I mean, I tried to reach out to a team and I gave up. I kept trying here and there. And I'm like, oh, hey, well, I guess you don't want me. Like, all right, I'll go figure something else out. And I did.
Well,
and it was pretty cool because there's way more hype now.
Yeah, I was like, I think everything happens for a reason. That's what I believe, at least. So,
well, even like I swear it had to have been 2014. I don't even, maybe before that. But I had like this whole image planned out for like when I quit racing, and like my whole plan was to buy a YZ250 and just like. Hardenduro, ride whatever on it, beat the crap out of it because it was affordable, and buy a YZ450 to ride moto and have fun and that kind of stuff. And now I'm not retired, but I got it now. So I beat myself to it. But yeah, I don't know. I always had that like envisioned for myself for some stupid reason.
That's like the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, yeah, I told Yamaha that, and they were probably like, what's wrong with this guy? But I think they maybe thought it was cool.
Yeah. No, I think it's awesome. You've definitely changed a lot of people's, like, perception of Yamaha and hard enduro. Because before it was like, oh, you're going to try and ride that in a hard enduro? Or even not even in a race, but just, like, take it out on the trail and ride it in hard stuff. And now, like, all kinds of people are trying to do it. So
I know. Looking back, I maybe should have just gotten like a couple WR250Fs instead. But like, it's so not my brand to be only on a four stroke. So
yeah,
I had to do it for the fans. I had to stick two stroke. But it would have been way less work. I would have had a bigger stator. I could have powered my fan, put a fan right on there. I would have had to do so much less work. It has like a wide ratio ish. Transmission already.
Would it have been as fun?
Nah, probably not.
Yeah, probably exactly.
Not. So I made the right choice. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
But the problem is now I have a transmission coming from Japan. I'm gonna split my cases and change out the South African guys. They've got in my head. Now I gotta try it. So they all do it in South Africa.
Very interesting.
So yeah, I'm changing out my transmission a little bit.
You're going international on us.
Yes, pretty much.
That's cool. Speaking of international, actually, that's what I was going to ask you a minute ago. So you're talking about the world. So you've traveled a lot. So another thing that we always talk about on this is, like, I don't know exactly everywhere you've been, but what's your favorite race that you've been to, like, overseas?
I guess it wouldn't be overseas, but I think just like the wildest one I ever did was Minas Riders, which was in Brazil. They only had it 2 years, but it was the same guys from Romaniacs. And okay. The first year was pretty good. And then the second year, I think they tried to save some money and they didn't have the right guy to get the right permits. And it kind of got shut down after 2 days.
Yikes.
And they called it. But man, the amount of terrain I covered in 1 day there was just... it was crazy. And like, you're just like riding through these little villages and like wild horses are just running in front of you, dogs chasing you.
Oh my God.
I had no idea where I was the whole time. Like, and then the second day, I don't remember, but I lost my cheek pad from my helmet and like we stuffed paper towels and duct tape. And I rode like 6 hours with a duct tape cheek guard, but I almost beat Graham Jarvis there. I freaking had him. I had him beat and I blew a hill. Like we were battling the whole second day to the finish. And all I had to do was literally just finish like on his rear tire and I would have beat him. And I was leading him and I couldn't get up this muddy hill and he beat me. It was close.
Oh.
So yeah, that was 2017. But yeah, Minas Riders in Brazil was...
okay.
Just in terms of like what I saw in 1 day, it was pretty wild.
That's really cool. So Jarvis actually has tours in Brazil now, and I'm planning on trying to go down this year and do a tour down there.
Yeah. So I bet you in the same area, Minas Gerais or something like that is the zone. But the race was, I don't know, Belo Horizonte. It looks like for us, well, for Americans, it looks like Belo Horizonte, but it's like Belo Horizonte. Mm-hmm. Belo Horizonte.
Yeah.
Belo Horizonte.
Yeah, because it's Portuguese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that race was cool.
So is there anywhere that you haven't been yet that you really want to go ride somewhere?
I haven't been to like, race. Yeah, I haven't been to like true Asia. I've been to Israel, which is like somehow I think part of the Asian continent, but it is not. I just can't associate that with Asia. So
yeah, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, not for me either. I don't. So I've never actually been to Asia, like real Asia. Yeah, I got invited to go to like that Uncle Hardenduro, but like it was like the schedule would have just been awful. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going. So
that one's crazy. Like, yeah. I've watched that one quite a bit, and it's just like, well, I guess the people in Indonesia are like huge hard enduro fans. And
dude, Graham Jarvis is like, he's like a Kim Kardashian figure.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So I had asked him that one time. I was like, well, like, what's the craziest place, like, as far as fans go? And he's like, Indonesia. He's like, they're literally trying, like, rip your shirt off. I'm like, Jesus. What?
Yeah, South America has some pretty wild fans too. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, Argentina and Brazil. But yeah, they're like, compared to like in America, people are just like, I don't know, it's not the same unless you're like Taylor Swift and then they freak out. But for us, it's like, they don't care. But I don't know, anything is exciting. It's like South America's had some really cool fans. Yeah. From what I've experienced.
That's awesome.
Went to Australia once. That was cool, but it wasn't like, I was there for like a weird one-off like exhibition style race. So like I had a great time, but I didn't like get to like experience like the riding essentially in Australia.
There's some really cool looking riding out there. It's like super gnarly in a lot of areas, but I don't know. I have a lot of people who follow me from Tasmania, and it's just like totally different there than it is in like true Australia on like I guess the mainland is what you'd call it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like very jungly almost, and I guess it gets cold in Tasmania, which I
Yeah,
didn't
and
think
New
that it
Zealand's
would get
not far
cold.
away from Australia too. New Zealand's like completely different.
Yeah, it's just
Australia is, when
crazy.
I think of Australia, I think of like Utah. I just think of like a lot of
Yeah,
open
yeah.
land and desert. But
Yep.
Utah is probably more mountainous, I think, than a lot of Australia in the
Parts
middle.
of Australia, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
That's
that was
funny.
cool. Erzberg is
So,
obviously its own race, but it's
yeah.
I love and hate it.
Are
Love and
you
hate it.
gonna go back this year?
Yes. As of now, yes.
Ooh, exciting.
Yes.
On the Yamaha. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
That'll be cool. I most likely going to be there this year watching, not
Nice.
racing, but watching. I have to clarify that because I
Yeah.
started saying that and people were like, "Oh my God, you're racing." No.
I mean, you can do the prologue, but holy hell, it's
But could I?
scary. Yeah, you can do the prologue easy.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, you probably would not qualify,
Yeah,
but
no,
you
it's
can do the
fine.
prologue so easily. You ride a, yeah, it's just a wide, sketchy road. It's just sketchy when you're going sixth gear tapped or fifth gear tapped. That's when it gets sketchy.
I don't typically ride that fast, so,
Okay, well,
but we'll see. We'll see how things go when I get out there. Maybe I'll
yeah.
just like on a whim rent a bike and just be like, oh, I'm just gonna do this.
Yeah.
But no, it'll be really cool. I've been watching Erzberg for like 10 years, and so this year I was like, well, I finally got my passport and I've been wanting to travel, so I'm like, why not?
Yeah, go
So
for it. Will you be in
yeah.
Pennsylvania for the Keystone Challenge the weekend before?
Potentially. I'm not 100% sure. Why?
Yeah. Oh, because I have to, and I'm very unhappy about it. But
Oh
yeah, it is
yeah.
what it is. Yeah.
Because you're gonna have to like fly out right after, right?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe that night even. And like, I ordered a crate motor. I decided it was going to be easier for me to fly with a built-out motor and just swap motors than do everything in the dirt parking lot at Erzberg. So
Yeah.
that's my plan. So that'll be
Right,
fun.
cool.
Yeah.
No, I think that, well, 'cause I'm West Coast based this year. So last year I was all East Coast, so it was really easy for me to get to those races 'cause everything's within like a 10-hour drive. Now it's a little more than 10 hours to get to those races.
Yeah.
So, we'll see how that one goes. My current plan is to be there but not race that one.
Yeah,
And
hang out and
then
watch.
yeah, and then go to overseas. But
Yeah.
we'll see how things play out here in the next few weeks.
I guess for those that don't know, the Keystone Challenge is like the back-to-back Pennsylvania rounds in our Hard Enduro series. And there was a group chat last year with Matt, the promoter of the series, and all the riders. And I was a heavy fan of splitting up the race weekends because it's stupid. And
It's a lot of riding for you
Tristan's
guys.
like, I love it. Nope, we don't want to go back and forth. No one wants to stay there both weeks. I'm like, bro, I do. I don't want to kill myself. I'm old, dude. You guys are 26. Shut up.
Yeah, last year was rough for you guys. Like
I went to the
I was,
hospital. I had to, like, I
yeah.
literally was like, and then I found out the AMA, like, I could have, if someone just brought it up, I would have been DQ'd day two because I got an IV. I didn't know that rule.
But you were not the only one that would have been
Yeah, there was
either.
like
There
six of
was
us
like
that got
three.
IVs.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, I
I was
know
at
of
the
at least three or
hospital with
four
my
other
buddies, like,
people.
all hanging out. Hey,
Yeah.
oh, you're
Yeah,
there.
it was crazy. I was, oh my God, it was insane. That it was so hot. I had, being from Arizona, I had never experienced heat like that before. Like, I've experienced heat, I lived in Phoenix in the summertime, but that was totally different. Oh my God. I don't know how you guys were riding. I was in a tank top and shorts and I was dying.
That's like the worst race of the year. So like you're in first gear for a large majority of that race.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was, that was bad. I remember
I'm wearing an Aero helmet this year, so I'll have more ventilation. That's my plan. Oh, good. And I might just cut a bunch of slits in my jersey. So I
just feel it. Yeah.
Maybe not even wear a jersey. I don't know.
Just do like cutoffs, like you see.
Yeah, cutoffs. Yeah.
Like it Brian works Deegan. With the mullet. Yeah. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, there we go. I have an incognito mullet. It's a discreet mullet. That's what I call it.
Is it though? I mean, compared to Gators, but
yeah. When I went to haircut, I was like, I want to get a discreet mullet. She's like, okay. And I'm like, yeah, just give me like a 4 on the side. She's like, that's not going to be discreet. I'm like, well, I don't want it to look like I just got a haircut, but like, I want to feel that.
You're so high maintenance about it.
It's hard. Oh, I don't cut my hair that often. So I wasn't that high maintenance. I just like, just make it look like I didn't get a haircut, but also kind of make it look like a mullet.
Slightly high maintenance, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I remember being in Pennsylvania. I was at the finish line when you came across, and I wasn't close enough to hear you talking, but I saw you hit the floor and I was like, whoa, what just happened? It was crazy.
Yeah, I was just like looking for Shay to go lay down. There was a point probably like 20 minutes before that where I like have never gotten off my bike in a race, and I literally like got off and I went and laid, and so there was like a pack of water in the middle of like a section called like last quarter or no quarter or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was just like laying there, and there was water. I was just like laying, took my helmet off, never took my helmet off ever in a race. I'm like laying there with no helmet on, just dumping water on myself, just completely gassed.
Well, and that's the thing about that humidity though, is like when you do that, it doesn't even really cool you off. It like,
no.
When I was,
I mean, I felt a little refreshed, I guess, but it didn't help me.
I was in Maine in similar humidity, and I was training for an ultra marathon last year. And so I was like running in similar conditions, and I jumped in the creek one day, and the creek didn't feel any kind of refreshing. And I got out and I almost felt like it felt worse. It felt like I had like a wet blanket on me. I was like, you can't escape it. So and that was like the week before that race. So when I saw you like on the floor, I was like, dude, I mean, I kind of know how you feel, but holy crap, like you push hard. So
yeah, that was and the insane. Best part was like I had so much electrolyte mix. Like I started getting cramps out there, and I had like I swapped packs because it's a 2-lap race, and I started with like a 3-liter pack with a bunch of electrolyte mix, had a fresh pack. Obviously I was just I burned through that, and I was just like taking stuff from anyone and everyone. Like I was drinking Prime. I was drinking anyone had something, I would just take it.
Yeah.
And like my calories were completely depleted too. Like I just was just eating food anyone had, like trying to just put something in because I knew I needed it. Yeah. But what was it? There was something. Oh, I had like the little mini pickle juice shots.
Yeah.
I had on my second lap, I had 2 of the big ones in my pack. Mm-hmm. Like I was like fully prepared for hell on earth. And like, I started cramping. I took one. A little while later, I took another one. So like, I actually got to the finish somehow without like crazy cramping. I guess I was proactive about the pickle juice. But then like, I got out of my gear, and like Cooper drove me to the hospital because he popped his shoulder out. So like his race was pretty much smoked. So he drove me to the hospital. And I'm like trying to get change like in the car, and I like I'm moved, and like the window's down, and then our sales guy at the time, he was there too. Next thing I started screaming, I was like, ah, and like the cramps were hitting. I'm in a car all like stuck, and I'm just like screaming in the car, cramping. Oh, it was so bad. Man. I was in
that's crazy. So but then you raced the next day. Like, how do you rally, like, mindset-wise from something
not,
like that?
I was not pumped. I also had 2 liters. Pretty sure it was 2 liters. I don't know. I had 2 bags. I think a liter is a big bag. So I had 2 liters straight of IV that they gave me, too.
Yeah.
And then, like, I didn't like pass out, but obviously like I like fell to the ground and I was definitely woozy. But they like wanted to like x-ray my chest to like bring this machine out. And I'm like, no, I'm not paying for that. Get that out of here. Like, I'm not getting an x-ray on my chest. She like starts putting a board. I'm like, what's this for? She's like, oh, we're going to x-ray your chest. I'm like, well, for what? Like, didn't you pass out? I didn't pass out. I had to like fight them to not x-ray. I'm like, I don't need that bill. We're in America. It's just not cheap. So, but yeah, I wasn't that excited the next day to ride. And I pushed hard. I lost a grip. I don't know. I've never lost. I just like fell over in the mud. I think we all had a hellacious first lap because no one literally gave a rat's ass to want to ride that day. And like Tristan ate crap in the mud. It was so muddy going to the finish because of all that rain we had like the day and a half before or whatever. Yeah. He fell and I passed him. I was like, you all right? Oh, you're good. And like literally not a minute later, I ate shit right in front of him. And like, I picked up my bike and my grip was just in the mud and it was wire tied on and everything. So I rode the rest of the lap. It wasn't far, but I rode the rest of the lap without a grip. And then you know, we spent some time, not a ton of time, but like I basically rallied from like fourth to somehow get back up. And I like, I think I passed Will. I'm pretty sure it was Will. Like not far from the finish. Like I was trying so hard. Like I think that race, I felt like it took me a while to like regroup and like find my rhythm again.
Yeah. So how do you have like any tricks or anything that you do when you're kind of in that like frustration or like really having something that's challenging? Like how do you keep a good mindset? How do you like keep pushing? Yeah.
I think it came from trials. When you have like a bad section, like you don't want to let it bother you for too long. So I like, you probably don't catch it on my GoPro, but like I'll tend to like fall over and like I get mad at myself for that mistake. And I'm like, come on, like put it together. I pull it together. Like you're better than this. You're riding lazy. So like, I try and put the negativity and like tell myself like, gee, what are you doing? Pull like, get your shit together and go. So, and I think when I rode trials, like you'd never really want to dwell on your bad performance the section before. And like, same thing as golf, like not that I really play golf, but I feel like golf is really comparable to trials. And once that negativity kind of sticks with you, it's just a downward spiral.
Yeah. I agree with that. Like I've changed a lot in the last like year and a half. And for me, I've changed my mindset a lot. And one of the things is focusing on getting rid of negativity, even something as simple as like, what's the worst that can happen? Because when you're on the trail, or at least for me, when I'm on the trail and I think that to myself, I envision myself falling off of the mountain or whatever, you know, and it's that split second, but that's still what I see. So I started saying, what's the best that could happen? And I've started envisioning, you know, then I'm seeing myself getting up over the obstacle or doing the wheelie or whatever it is I need to do. And it could just be that I have more skills now, but things are working out. So
I bet you it's a mixture of both, 100%. Because the mental confidence thing is always, always really huge. And even for me, when I race enduro cross or something, like I'll see the track and like I'll already be in a negative headspace and it's like, no, my night's done. Like I'm already in my head. So, or if you're on the starting line, like you look at, like, I don't really look at everyone, but I just like tell myself they're all just a bunch of jokes so I can get a better start with them, you know? Amp yourself up.
It's really interesting to hear that. Like, I think it's kind of refreshing to hear that, like, you still, like, you're not just like, hey, I got this. Like, you know, you still have those moments. And I mean, I think a lot of times people see pro riders and they're like, they put you guys on a pedestal and that's where you guys are all the time. And so it's nice to see like the humanity, you know?
Yeah. We're human. We make mistakes. Yeah, my lap three at King of Motos this year, I was not proud of lap three. Lap four got better. I was getting frustrated. I started like, you just start getting lazy. You're like, I'm not tired. And then you like tell yourself you're not tired to regroup, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How were you feeling on that last little like remote finish thing that they had?
That was the best part of the whole race. We just should have done that like 12 times. It would have been so much better. No, I felt really good there. Honestly, this year's King of Motos, last year I felt was really good. This year was mediocre. It was just a lot of downhill. That downhill at the end is like kind of the only fresh downhill that actually mm-hmm. took some sort of like, didn't really take navigation, but more like line reading. But I knew where I was going the whole time because it's on Onyx. We've already ridden all these canyons. I studied it. Tristan studied it. Will studied it. Ryder didn't study it, so he didn't really take much turns at the lead. And then Max Gerson posted lap 3 preview. Mm-hmm. I could just sit at my hotel and watch that in 2x speed and know exactly where I'm going. And I studied the Onyx map and like second lap, oh, I'm going to turn here and not go that way. And mm-hmm. then I looked at my GPS once the whole race just for like reference to make sure I was on the right path. But
yeah,
it wasn't a factor. And I think that's why like I couldn't catch those guys because they knew where they were going. That gap was kind of there. And I just kind of like got my setup was a little bit off too, but like I just kind of got like defeated. I'm like, I can literally cannot get these guys. And I'd catch them a little bit. I'd get a minute and a half back going up downtown, like the really hard one. And then they would pull me back out again. I'm like, God, that killed me. So
how are you feeling?
I'm a lot better, I think. I feel like I'm a lot better when it's all virgin terrain. That's where I shine. Because we don't know where we're going. And like you actually have to like have really good bike skills. You have to read the terrain better. That's where I thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hawaii, I'm definitely looking forward to it more than last year. Well, I was actually really looking forward to it last year. But setup was way off. I fried my clutch too. It wasn't good. No, you know, those guys obviously kicked my ass, but they knew where they were freaking going, dude. I swear. I came down a hill.
Thing that you just said.
I caught Covello, or like, no, Covello caught me in like, I had like a 5-minute lead coming out of the Enduro cross track because like, we had to come back into the Enduro cross track. I had like almost, Covello caught me in like 10 minutes, like a 5-minute lead. And like, that's unheard of. But he was just like greasing all the, I went up the first hill in the woods and instantly I was like, oh no, we're in trouble. Like I instantly knew I was done. Couldn't go anywhere. And then Covello caught me and I'm like, I went up this hill and I like had to turn left and I like got on the brakes and I like didn't, I just like kept sliding into the ribbon. I'm like, okay, well I'll follow Covello. He knows what he's doing. We go down this like canyon draw. It wasn't rocky. It was just like that muddy, I don't know, steep hills in this canyon. Yeah. And there's like arrows turning right. And I'm like, okay, get ready to go. And like Covello just like skips the turn and like keeps going straight and then like loops around and makes a huge left and gets a run on the hill on the other side of the canyon and then rips up the hill. And then instantly I was like, oh, you dirty dog. Like, you know, you've ridden this. This is probably your guys' loop. So needless to say, I did not make that hill and I never saw him again until the finish.
I was pretty impressed with his riding.
Yeah.
Even on the mainland when he came.
Oh yeah. No, he's really good. He smoked it there. And then there was like a hill, like I couldn't even see his tracks. It took me like 8 tries and I didn't even see a track on the hill. He was just like, and rode right up it apparently. And then
so you're ready this year though.
Yeah. And then I went the wrong way. That was obviously on me. And I kept riding and I'm like, I'm not seeing a pink ribbon. Maybe it'll be the next one. And then I'm like, and then I was like, oh no. So then it took me forever to get back on trail. This one guy came and found me and he's like, you got to get in the main line. I'm like, I was in the main line. I can't go anywhere. And I thought for sure I had to have been in like 12th. And somehow I was like in 4th still. Like no one had even got to where we were after I had been lost, struggling, trying to get back on track. And then I crashed I don't know how many times on that stupid wall ride, that infamous video meeting shit. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, they're like, they're 15 minutes ahead. And I'm like, all right. And this wasn't even Cabela. That was like second and third with Ryder and Kana. And then like I'm riding through the creeks. The water is so deep. I'm like there's not even like a danger. Like, hey, don't go over here. You're going to drown your bike out. I should be riding with a spare air filter and spark plug this year and tools to like, because most likely if it rains like that, like someone's flooding their bike, guaranteed it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, my bike was running like crap because I definitely had water that got into the carb a little bit. And yeah, we got in like, it was like a new climb. I think it was like the one thing they hadn't ridden yet, knew what they were doing. Yeah. And it was like virgin. And I made like 10 minutes back on Ryder and Kana on one hill. I'm like, what are you guys doing? This is the easiest part of the whole track. I could actually have traction. So yeah, I actually passed both of them and then put a little bit of time on them. And then boom, we get into the steep valleys again, muddy hills. And I got annihilated. I couldn't get out of this one. I don't even know how I did get out of it eventually. But then fried the clutch. It was a nightmare. Nightmare. I was getting scared. I'm like, I didn't think I was ever gonna get out of there. I had no idea where I was, just in the jungle. I mean, sleeping with the pigs for warmth that night.
I live here now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and then great. I finally got out. I had no idea where I was on the track. I'm like, we have to be at the I've been out here for hours. Like, I have no water. I'm cramping like a mother. Clutch is smoked, but I couldn't get out of this one hill. There's like two routes. And finally, I like kept trying. It took me like five tries. And finally, I like got a run up from the other hill and like turned around. And I just like death grip with no clutch and just rode at it. And somehow got up and pushed the rest of the way out once I got above the top route. And James Flynn's dad was there, Jim. And he's like, he's hiking. He's like, have you seen James? I'm like, I haven't seen James since the starting line, dude. Like, I am dead. I have no idea where anyone is. Like, this is horrendous. So he had like cramp pills. He had water and he had gas. He's like, you guys have been out for so long. Like, no one's going to have enough gas to finish. And I'm like, you're telling me, dude. Like, so I sat and hung out with Jim for probably 5 minutes. And I'm like, I don't know if I can get out of here. Like, what's it like to the finish? Like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was at the finish. Like, there was not one more uphill. I was right there. I just had to ride down this ridge and it went into like the fields turn track to the enduro cross. And I had no idea. I thought for sure I was going to sleep out there.
That's crazy.
So I'm actually looking forward to it this year.
That's good. You know what you're in for a little bit.
Yeah. Nice. I got the new tire set up too. We're dialed. We're good.
There you go.
I got the Hawaiians sweating now. They're going to be like, oh, this Howley, watch out for this guy.
Oh, I love it. All right. So then what's your favorite race in the U.S. then? Because I feel like we've heard a little bit about the ones you don't like.
Yeah. I don't know. I do good at Tough Like Roar, even though I hate it. Mm-hmm. I like that one. It was way too hard. It was already hard the year before.
Yeah.
It was just way too hard this year or last year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like that one. It's got a really cool mix and like, even though it's slippery there on the East Coast, the rocks are still kind of coarse. So there is some sort of traction to be had there. So I like that one. Moab was cool last year. I like Moab too.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot about that one. I'm excited to see that one this year.
Last year was the first one, but I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
So I just had a good time. It was like not overly hard, but you know, relatively fast, but has some really nice technical bits, but not like overbearing for the top pros.
That's good.
Still bottleneck though, that's for sure. Hard to get away from that.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be really cool to see that. And like all of these West Coast races are new to me. I didn't start last year until Battle of the Goats, and that was the first one that I saw. So this is all new to me, and I'm like super stoked about it. But most of my riding has also been East Coast too. So I'm like learning how to handle all this West Coast stuff. It's just totally different. So like the fact that you guys can like so easily transition between East and West Coast is just amazing to me. It's just like, it's totally different riding.
Yeah. I mean, West Coast is good because you got all the traction, but grinding stone's scary. It's like, you have to like retrain your brain to know what's actually possible there.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks scary.
Yeah. I don't really like it that much. It's cool. It's really cool. Really good spectator friendly-ish one compared to the others. Mm-hmm. But it's just hard to like have a race that's challenging without like destroying people's bikes.
Yeah.
I think we all finished with bent bars last year in the pro class probably.
Well, that makes me feel better about the stuff that I do out here.
Yeah.
Definitely not on the same level, but it's gnarly out here. West Coast is really different. And I don't know what you're talking about traction, because where I've been at out here.
Well, the sand sucks. And the silt. No traction. The dirt traction sucks, but the rocks have grip.
See, I guess everywhere I've been riding, it's like loose rocks on top of dirt.
Oh, yeah, the little rocks, that's like... that's why I hate all those parts of King of Motos, is just, you're just bouncing off every rock. Just give me all the big rocks and play the floor as lava.
I did a hill climb the other day, and I made it, like, three-fourths of the way up, and I found out that my mousse is too stiff. I didn't know that, and I was, like, bouncing like crazy and just sliding on all these rocks. It was just so ridiculously hard. So when you said that there's traction right now, I was like, no, sir, there's not.
There, you just got to find it. It's there.
I got to find the bigger rocks. That's the... Yeah. So there was this really big... And the setup was off too. Yeah. So we're going through a wash. I fail on this hill climb. I was really upset about it. I was like, fine, let's just go back down, whatever. We'll go to this other thing that we found the other day. So we go to this, like, it's probably like a 7-foot rock, and it's just gigantic, and it takes up the entire wash. And the only way that I could get over it was to like go way off to the right, and like the boys had to help me get my bike lined up, because I was like, I can't do a pivot turn yet. I haven't figured out how to do it because my foot doesn't touch the ground. So I'm still working on it. But anyway, so I got lined up, and I was like, dude, this is gonna be so slippery. So as soon as my front tire hit it, I hesitated because I thought it was gonna be slippery. So I guess in this way, I understand what you're saying about traction. I hesitated, I fell backwards, and then I lined up and did it again. And I was just like, I'm just going to commit to it because I think it's going to be better than I think it is. It's like visually scary though, because it's so freaking huge. And then I made it up over it, and I was like, okay, that was like nothing. All right. Interesting. So now that's my new rock to session. So
there you go. Training rock.
So, but that's like the only rock that I found that actually has traction. Everything else is like, I guess it's like limestone-y out here. I'm in Northern Arizona, but like the other side of the state from Page. So it's very crumbly.
Where would that be? Is that, are you Western or Eastern?
I'm Western.
Western.
Northwest. Arizona. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I've been. Oh, kind of like Kingman-ish?
Yep. That's exactly where I'm at.
Yes. Yeah. Have you ridden with Tyler Herndon yet?
I have no idea who that is.
Okay. He's not there right now. Maybe he is. I don't know. But he's got, I think, like 10 acres north of Kingman in some valley. And it's like the most boring land ever. But then you ride a bunch of flats, and there's like some really cool canyons a little bit north of Kingman that are sweet.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
I'll have to try and get an invite out there eventually.
Yeah. Well, was it Blake from Hard Enduro Burros was just there a couple weeks ago too.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, I don't know if you know where the Hualapai Mountains are.
I've heard of them. Oh, you're in that like stuff that breaks apart. The rocks there in Kingman, they're very crumbly.
Mm-hmm.
It's decomposed literally granite.
The Hualapais are right behind the property I'm living on right now. Yeah. So I've got 6 acres to play on, and then the mountains are right there.
Yeah, you're in like the worst dirt. It's not dirt.
It hasn't rained since I've been here. It snowed.
It doesn't rain there.
It snowed the other day.
It's high enough up, I think. If you're kind of where you're at.
Yeah.
It does get snow there.
So it snowed and then it melted down here. But then we were riding and I was like, I'm going to hit this hill climb. No, it was a freaking mountain. And I was like up, up, up. And I was like, when am I stopping? Oh my God. And then all of a sudden I was in snow. So I was like, okay.
Actual mountain.
Yeah.
For those people watching this, she's not riding on real dirt. It's pretty miserable.
I'm gonna clip this portion.
Yeah. You can't even turn in that stuff. The front end is like, it's like riding little marbles everywhere.
Yeah, it is. It's been so ridiculous. There's a couple hill climbs that like I'm determined to make it. But like I said, I was told that my tire setup is making it essentially impossible for me to do it. I've made it up a couple of them, but they're not really that crazy. But the one I'm just dead set on, I have to get it. I've been here for 2 weeks and I've conquered the other two that I couldn't get. And so now I'm giving myself 2 weeks to do this one.
Yeah.
That's my timeline always. I'm like, I got to be able to get it. So
2 weeks. Well, drill some holes in your mist and then you're good to go.
Yes, I'm working on that. I gotta figure out how to do all that without the proper tire like
Rabiconda
tools for it and everything. Yeah. So, but I will get it done and then I'll be super stoked to get up there. It's a hell of a hill. So at least for me. But anyways, enough about me. Yeah. So is there anything like super, well, okay. I don't know how I want to word this. Hold on. I guess you've been so busy with Yamaha, like, and getting everything ready for the bike. It kind of seems like, and not in a bad way, please don't take it this way, but it seems like clinics and stuff are kind of taking a little bit of a backseat to that. Is that right now?
Yeah, it's just hard for me to do that much stuff. And then even when I do the in-person clinics, it's kind of just like, if someone sets it up and I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll come out and do that for like in-person stuff. I need more time or need more people, but like I can't afford to pay more people to do that. So it's on my shoulders.
Well, I've got 6 acres for you to come out here and you can give me private lessons on how to ride on this stuff out here.
Yeah. Well, I think there's that like Gypsy 500 race, the Gypsy Tail 500. I did it last year and it's like an off-road race in Mesquite, Arizona. But I was talking to Blake and trying to do, I think we'll film more content for the CW2 training after that. Nice. And then I'm going to make my way to Page, do some pre-riding. So I'll kind of be in the region-ish.
Cool.
Here and there in March. But we'll see. I don't know. I'm bouncing around trying to do the best I can.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I just know that like a lot of the times people just get super excited about clinics coming around. Like I said, in person is really cool. In my opinion, I'm somebody who does really well in in-person clinics because I need modifications sometimes.
Well, it's really good because like, you know, I have on my training thing, like people can submit videos.
Yes.
Some people send really good videos and other people are like I can barely even see what you're doing in that video. It's so bad, but I'll try my best to help you out.
Yeah.
But in person, it just like helps reassure everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's funny because I just posted a video the other day and somebody goes, you should be standing up. And I'm like, I am standing up. 100% I'm standing up in that video. But you can't tell because my legs are so short and the angle that my friend was shooting at, it literally looks like I'm sitting the whole time. So I'm like, I'm I just have little T-Rex legs. Like, they're not that long. So like, you know, but knowing that I'm in a position that, like, obviously my body positioning looks very different than like yours when you're on your bike. So like, yeah, getting like that, but getting that immediate feedback that like, hey, yes, this is how it's supposed to look like for me specifically. That is really, really helpful for me. But like I said, when I'm places that I can't get to clinics, I absolutely love having this platform. So thank you for doing this, because it's a lot of your time and attention, but like, it's amazing. And I know several people who are doing it and they love it just as much. Like, my friend Crystal's the one who told me about it. And like, it's so cool that we can just like, we can be nerdy and be like, all right, we're going to do this drill today. And we go on there and we're across the country and we can still do it together. Yeah,
there's kind of been a fun stuff too, because like, there's like basically like a Facebook type feed on there. So people can like share stuff and open collaboration and bring up random talking points. Or like, I shared a video, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, but it was a video of me eating absolute shit over the handlebars. So like, I won't share that on social media till later, because I know Blake wants to protect it for Hard and Real Burrows. But I'm like, it's fine, I'll post it here. No feet pics, though. My feet are nasty. No one wants feet pics on there.
That's a different platform.
Yeah, it's a whole other platform.
That's how you're really funding everything now.
Yeah. Feet pics. Oh, man. Gnarled feet.
I bet there's people out there who are probably into that, but
maybe, yeah. Too shameful to post it.
No, I think it's really cool that having the community to collaborate with like that was really awesome. When I was going to go do a race in North Dakota and I posted about, I was terrified about doing the like enduro cross section. Like, I'd never done that before, but you and then other people were giving me advice on it. And that was really awesome to just kind of get that and be able to focus in on those things. It actually ended up being optional. So I took the chicken line because I wanted to try it, but it rained so much.
Not in a race scenario either, too, you know.
That and North Dakota's clay. So
yeah, there's a lot of nastiness up there.
I was struggling with the clay and the logs, and it was all single track, off camber, and I can't think of what the word is right now. But like, tight turns, like back on itself. What is that word?
Switchbacks.
Thank you. That's what it was. So like, off camber, downhill switchbacks. And I had never done that before. And so I was like, add the clay. And then there's a log at the bottom of it that's like 3 feet around. And I was like, I was picking my bike up so much during that race. So I got to that section.
Race? I never even heard of that.
It's called a Schmedium Enduro. So it's the second year that it was being put on. And yeah, it was, so I was like, well, I'll go and try it. Like, that's pretty cool.
When are they doing it again this year?
They are, actually. And it's the weekend after TKO.
Okay. I have a really, I think it's a really good idea.
Okay.
But my plan is to like go on Facebook Marketplace and try and find like a 1992 WR250 or something like that. And just like find whatever I can on Rocky Mountain. And if I don't think any of them, my sponsors probably have something that fit that bike, but basically just race one of like the non-premier races on an old school.
That'd be cool.
Yamaha. That's my plan.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So that'd be fun to just like kind of like document the bike build, whatever I do.
Yeah.
To it.
Yeah. This property is like really cool. It's North Dakota's got a very small series. There's only like 5 races every year there. And this race is the least attended of the 5 races.
Plexus because hard.
It's harder. Yeah. So, last year I was helping like get the word out about it and everything, 'cause I had lived in North Dakota at the beginning of the year. I think this year, Champion Brick Racing is going to try and get out there to do it. So I'm just like telling everybody, I had so much fun. Like I struggled, but it was so much fun and the people out there are fantastic. So I think it'd be cool if we could get some more people out there. I mean, it's as hard as you can get in North Dakota, but if it rains, it gets pretty gnarly. So
be careful.
Yeah. It's fun though. But it'll be cool to see you race that on the, you said the non-premier round.
Yeah, I want to try. Like, I don't know if I'll be able to do the East ones, depending on the Enduro Cross schedule. And I still don't even have. I need to find one for the right price, right? Like, there has to be some sort of budget permitted on it. Like, you know, around $2,000 for some old clapper, and see what I can make of it.
That's awesome. I'm really excited for that. That'll be really cool to see.
Yeah. Honestly, that would probably like get more YouTube views than any of the other crap I'm doing, to be honest.
Probably, yeah. Actually, that goes back to your content creator, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's purely just for fun. Like I thought it would be funny to do, and
I don't know what happened. I'm gonna laugh if you like win on that bike.
Depending, I mean, I think I could, depending on the race. Probably be hard at the main ones. I mean, maybe that bike would be better. It's like a true wide ratio transmission. Maybe I'd be better. I don't know.
Very well could. Yeah. You would be the person who would be able to make it work, though. So that'll be interesting to see. Well, I think that was all the questions and everything that I had for you. I always give people time at the end to say their shout outs and thank yous. So this is your time.
I don't know. I don't have that many. I guess shout out to my family for letting me escape and do this all the time. Obviously my parents for getting me into it, and then Yamaha for taking a chance with me, and Rocky Mountain for stepping up and helping make this dream become a reality, and obviously everyone else through the years that have got me here. But I just feel fortunate that I'm still around having fun and looking forward to getting some better results as the year goes on.
Super excited to see as you get the bike more dialed in and get all this stuff and you get more comfortable on it, see what you can do. Because, I mean, I know that you don't love your results, but I thought it was pretty impressive for going out there for King of the Motos and just like, I mean, you didn't know how the bike was going to perform, so I saw it as good.
I finished. I bent my shifter. I got stuck in second gear a little bit in the prologue, but.
Well, thank you again. I really appreciate your time and you coming out here. This was really cool.
Sweet. All right. Well, awesome. I guess I'll see you in Grinding Stone if you're going.
Yes,
there. You probably will.
Yep, cool. I will be. Yep. All right. I'll see you then. Thanks. Yep.